Wilfred Cantwell Smith, a Canadian Islamicist, comparative religion scholar, and Presbyterian minister, once said, "From now on, any serious intellectual statement of the Christian faith must include, if it is to serve its purpose, some sort of doctrine of other religions." What does this say about my church community or religious tradition if it lacks the resources to help me think through the meaning of religious diversity? What should our Hindu, Buddhist, Islamic, or other religious neighbor think when they realize that Christians regard religious diversity as a problem to be solved rather than a promise to be celebrated and received? How might they feel? Last fall, I was privileged to hear John Tataminal speak. John presented a question: how does it feel to have my Christian neighbor regard my tradition and me as a problem to be solved? He goes into the idea of what he calls multiple religious participation, and how almost all of us are engaged in this by some form or another. This could be as simple as doing the Eucharist upstairs while practicing yoga downstairs. According to a Pew Research Center survey in 2009, one-third of Americans, 35%, say they regularly or occasionally attend religious services at more than one place, and most of these, 24% of public overall, indicate that they sometimes attend religious services of a faith different from their own. John proposes that the question is not if, but whether the form of multiple religious participation we're engaged in is salutary in life. Why is it problematic to be a Buddhist and a Christian, but not a capitalist and a Christian? Does your multiplicity help you in the struggle for justice and the flourishing of creation? Does it give you capacity to tune your heart to set it free from captivity from toxic desires, racist desires, or capitalist forms of desire? And if your multiple religious participation is actually a way of modifying the faith of other people, like you get your Lululemon mat and you do your yoga, but you know nothing about yoga philosophy, then you're just playing a capitalist game and calling it multiple religious participation. You are only acquiring the convictions and practices of another tradition to market it and to satisfy your core capitalist ego. Whenever Jesus in the scriptures encountered someone from a tradition other than his own, he never asked them to abandon that tradition. In fact, he even commends the faith of the foreigner over that of his own people. The only form of multiple religious participation that Jesus is on record as opposing is the simultaneous worship of God and money. Multiple religious participation can be devastating and can be eviscerating of the dignity, convictions, and practices of other traditions. But it can also be done rightly and can be profoundly liberating. The choice of which kind, though, is up to us all. Welcome to Grub and Grace. I am your host, Mark Flower, and we will be talking Taoism and what it means to be a Christian Taoist with my guest, Joshua Noel. Now, Joshua doesn't consider himself to be a Taoist expert, but rather a Taoist Christian aspiring to be a better Taoist. Now, leading up to this conversation, I didn't know much about Taoism. I'm guessing that the majority of you listening to me talk may not know much about this topic either, let alone knowing that Taoism was even a thing. So let me give you a little snapshot before jumping into this conversation. Taoism is an ancient Chinese philosophy and religious tradition which originated more than 2,000 years ago around the 4th century BCE in China, making it one of the oldest philosophies still practiced today. unlike Christianity or other Western religions, Taoism does not necessarily involve worshiping a god or a deity, but rather it acknowledges numerous deities and spirits while seeing them as manifestations of the Tao rather than separate entities. Its key beliefs include the Tao, which is the universal force and natural order of all existence, the yin and the yang, which is commonly associated with Taoism and is the dualistic nature of the universe, representing opposite yet complementary forces, and the Wu Wei, which is the principle of non-action or effortless action, allowing things to follow their natural course. Taoism emphasizes living in harmony with the Tao. The aim is to cultivate a state of calm and balance, promoting health, longevity, and spiritual insight. Practitioners of Taoism may even have traditions and guidelines when it comes to food. Be sure to stick around near the end of this conversation as Joshua and I discuss a couple dishes you can even try at home. So, without further ado, I truly hope you enjoy this delightful conversation about Christian Taoism. I've also got my little dish here.
Fantastic. That looks so much more professional. I literally just had like a big plate and had like noodles in the middle and then the stir fries on both sides. And I was like, I'll try both and just, it'll be fine.
I actually haven't
have chopsticks.
I haven't tried this yet. So, because I made it strictly so that I could photograph it last night and then I haven't tried it. So I'm not going to try it here. This is delicious.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about it because I love the ginger. Like the ginger just adds so much to it.
Yeah. I haven't cooked with ginger like that before. And I think that probably was my big takeaway from the dish is I was like, I think I want to use ginger more often.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, you're actually the first show that I've done where I've actually cooked a specific dish for. So I'm actually very happy that you reached out to me about this.
I love it though. Like, it's just fun. I love food. We recently did on my other podcast, the Whole Church Podcast.
Yeah.
We started a series that we're talking like about people's like occupation work and whether what we're talking about in seminaries and stuff are actually relevant. And the first one was talking about our jobs in the food industry. And I was like, that was fun. Mm-hmm. Reminded me, I just love food. Like it's just something about it, man.
It's the joy of life.
Yeah. For sure. For sure.
All right. Why don't I kick this off before we get too much into the weeds as far as just kind of talking about stuff. No worries at all. All right. Welcome back to Grub and Grace. I'm here with this dude, Joshua Noel. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
So I'll go ahead and introduce you just a little bit, and then I'll let you kind of talk about yourself after that a little bit. But Joshua is a licensed minister. He is an aspiring Taoist Christian. He is also an open theist, not a process theologian or theist. He's also been a podcaster for a long time and taught hermeneutics and children's church for many years before he left his previous denomination of the Pentecostal church for a Lutheran church. So I don't know if you want to share anything more. I don't know if I've covered everything.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. I don't love talking about myself too much, but I'm told that it's like, Josh, you know, that's not good. You're just kind of like, I'm a guy. And they're like, yeah, but like, you're also in seminary and going for like two masters. And like, some of that stuff makes people care sometimes. And I'm like, yeah, but why? When we just talk about food, you know?
You got to talk about food.
Yeah. And you mentioned you had Will on recently too. So that's is my pastor. So I am an online member of Will's Church. That's the Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
That's super cool. And my listeners will definitely have heard Will's episode before this one. I'm going to try to bump up his a little bit just because of the timeliness of the movie that we talked about that came out. So that everyone should, or whoever listened to my podcast, should know who Will is at this point.
Yeah. I mean, everybody should know who Will is anyway, just in general.
I mean, he's just a good guy.
Yeah, for sure.
So I should probably let everyone know that we will be talking about Taoism, or Taoism, as it's more commonly known in China and Chinese philosophy. We're also going to be talking about like the philosophy of like the five tastes and kind of what goes along with that, like the five sense and the five sounds and all that. So we're going to be kind of digging into that a little bit, especially Joshua, since you are a Christian Taoist, I think is what you said you identify as, right?
Yeah, I try to identify as like a Taoist Christian. I've been saying Christian Taoist for a long time, but then like people are like taking that as like I'm primarily a Taoist and like Christian is the adjective, and I'm like, no, it's kind of the other way around. It's just like it sounds better if you put it Christian first. You know, it just rolls off the tongue easier. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm a Christian.
I wish there was a better way to
Taoist ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish there was a better way to say like, no, they're equal, because if whatever comes last is kind of like the primary one, like you said.
Yeah.
Like if you say you're a Christian Taoist, everyone thinks that you're a Taoist. But if you say you're a Taoist Christian, everyone thinks that you're a Christian that practices Taoism as well. And if it's more of that, like that level playing field, how do you actually say something like that?
Yeah, it's like, I don't actually think they're at odds. So it's kind of like, does it really matter which one goes first?
Exactly.
You know, like the parts that I follow in Taoism, I would say are profoundly Christian, and the things that I like about my Christian faith are also profoundly Taoist. So it's kind of like, mm-hmm. Whatever order you want.
And that's the beauty of Taoism. And I'm sure you can go into this a little further, but my limited research, like when you asked me about this subject, I was like, cool. I had no idea about it. And I started looking up about it. And like, this is pretty cool principles that Taoism follows. And Taoism actually allows for other religions to kind of be blended with it, because it doesn't actually have like a deity that it follows. It doesn't have like a God figure like Christianity does. It's more of this kind of all-encompassing harmony with nature and the world and everything like that. So, and I could be just getting that completely wrong. Anyone listening, you're probably just like, let me explain this.
No. That's it is interesting. It's part of like my schooling. I did a few years just studying like different world religions and stuff. And it's really weird. It's kind of a distinction between like Eastern and Western faiths. A lot of your Western faiths are more exclusive. Like you don't often see people who are like Christian and Muslim, because it's like, well, how you view God and how we view God is completely different. It's not compatible, you know, whatever. But like in Eastern thought, they really just don't have a lot of that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Siddhartha had at one point even said, like, he's like, I don't care about the God question. It doesn't actually impact my life. So believe in God, don't believe in God, who cares? But like a lot of Westerners like, oh, Buddhists, they follow the Buddha. That's their God. And it's like, no, not quite. But at the same time, you do see like a lot of like, it's hard when you look at the culture, because like when you study the religion, like we think of religion is a Western word, you know, like that. I saw there was a study in Japan where like a lot of people will identify as non-religious, but then a vast majority of Japanese people will still say that they're Shinto. And it's like, well, for us, that's a religion. That doesn't make any sense. And they're like, no, that's just, you know, it's part of our life. It's whatever. They don't put that kind of label on it, because like, religion kind of creates these structures. Like you have to fit everything in a box. Whereas for a lot of your more Eastern thoughts, it's like, I like this Taoist idea, I'll use it. And I like this Buddhist idea, you know, I'll accompany it. And they might stop at a shrine and pay respects to a god. And a lot of them don't even know if they think that God's real or not. It's just been so part of the tradition for so long that they're like, it doesn't matter if it's real. Whereas Westerns, like, everything matters. Is it real? Is it not? Are you in my camp? Are you in the other camp? And like, we structure things. I don't think it's bad or good. It's just kind of like that. That's kind of the difference, I think, is religion is just a Western word. So it's hard to like for us to think of like, what do you mean a Taoist who's also a Buddhist and also, you know, and for them, they're like, what do you mean you're just Christian? Like, you don't see any wisdom in any other traditions at all, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a difference of thought, I think.
Yeah, and it kind of makes me think of, so back in October, we both were at Theology Beer Camp back in Denver, Colorado. Great time. And this whole conversation kind of made me think of John Thaddeus McNeil's talk on one of the days of the main stage. Future editor Mark here. I just want to make a quick note that I mispronounced his name. His name is actually John Tatominil. I also want to make a note that in the moment of this conversation, I misremembered some of the things that he had talked about during his conversation at Theology Beer Camp. I just want to make this note, and here you go, back to the conversation. And he was talking about how he's a Christian that grew up in India, and so he was in proximity to lots of Buddhism, Islam, like a lot of these kind of like different religions kind of circulating around that area, and even within his family. And a lot of people thought it was kind of weird that he was a Christian. And when, you know, he was kind of pressured sometimes to, you know, practice like the other faiths that were common with his like geographical location. And growing up, I think he was in Canada. I think he came to America at some point too after that. Mm-hmm. And then he was talking about how he grew up in that world. And then he went to go visit, I think it was Japan. I forget it was an Eastern country. I forget where it was, but he basically kind of, I guess, trained under like a monk, like a Buddhist monk. And trained is maybe not the right word, but he kind of like had like a tutelage, I guess. And he learned the religion and just like in proximity with this other monk, and the monk kind of teaching him the ways of his religion and his way of life. And he had all these profound questions and philosophical questions that he would talk with the monk about, like, you know, like, since I'm doing this, like, am I betraying my own religion of Christianity? And the monk, you know, had these, you know, profound ways to respond to him, like, no, like, you know, you don't have to betray your own religion to learn about another religion. It doesn't mean you have to give up and practice my religion just because you're here and you're spending time with me and you're understanding and you kind of see a lot of, you know, similarities and whatnot. And I just thought that was kind of cool, like that he was bringing these different kind of like seemingly dichotomy kind of ideas from this Western world, where, you know, you even use the term box, and especially in the evangelical spaces, it's very boxed in, and you have to be boxed in with a lot of these circles here. So I just think, I just love the kind of openness of everything here.
Yeah. You get some really funny stories when you see some of like Western Christians who've gone to like evangelize or, you know, spread the gospel in some of these Eastern countries. Cause I, you know, when you hear their version of the story coming back, it's like, oh yeah, cool, people got saved. But a lot of times when you hear it from the other side, you're like, cause now we have the internet, so you can look up our articles and you just get to like read the stuff. And it's so funny. They're like, they came and said, this thing that Buddha taught was wrong, and that's why you should believe Jesus. And I'm like, okay, so I won't believe that thing that Buddha taught and believe the rest of the things. And cool. Yeah. Jesus sounds good too. And it's just kind of like, they're like, oh, I'm going to attack it and I'm going to show you why it's wrong. And they're like, okay, that part's wrong. Cool. Like, you know, whatever. It's just so funny. Cause you just don't have that here. Like, you know, it's everything has to be right or everything's wrong. And even some of us who do kind of see the nuance still. So you mentioned theology beer camp, and this is where I love Dr. Tom Ord, but one of our big disagreements is kind of along the lines of, he's like, we all do have a box whenever we think of like what God is or is not. Everybody does have a box, and like, I see where he's coming from, and I do largely agree with the idea. But I think the problem is when you focus on your box, when you're saying like God is love, we agree on that. Okay, so we're immediately, you know, we're constraining God because we're saying he is love, which means he's not these other things. And I see where he's coming from, and I don't disagree with him. I think the problem is like, we spend so much time focusing on the box that we don't actually focus on God or the Tao or, you know, whatever, like the things that are actually enriching about it, we forget about because we're so busy trying to define the thing. If that makes sense.
I guess maybe another way of putting that is we're too busy focusing on the rules as opposed to letting God speak to us.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause like, not just rules either. Like I love theology. But when you spend all your time saying, this is what God is, this is what God isn't, and we're like, we're talking about the character of God even, and you might have a really good understanding of God, but it's like, did you forget that relationship part of it or like how we're connecting with it? And I don't think Dr. Orr does, because you see like his pictures of like he's hiking and stuff. Like, I think he does a great job with that. But I think his teaching can lead someone to focus too much on stuff that I'm not sure how much it matters. So for me, I've always kind of been like Taoist curious, and it wasn't until like last year that I was like, I'm going to start embracing this term because I've been studying it anyway, and I just kind of was scared to claim it. Now I'm like, you know, whatever, I don't care anymore. There was an event in October. There was a shooting at my house while I was at theology camp, leaving theology camp, and, you know, my wife got hit, my dog got shot. Everybody's okay now. Everybody's healthy now. I don't know if okay is the right word. But it was so interesting because I remember like times like when I was pregnant or thinking about the stuff that I'm like grasping for definitions, like, okay, if, you know, God isn't always able to do anything like Dr. Ord says, so maybe he just wasn't able to do something in that situation. And I'm grasping for all this knowledge. And the thing that actually gave me peace was I reread the Tao Te Ching a lot during that time. And one of his teachings is don't respect the clever. And it's so interesting. He talks about how like when you fill your head up with too much knowledge, you just get confused and stressed out. And I'm like, That's true, because that's what I was doing. I was like, okay, well, if God is this way, then that makes sense of the situation. And if this happened, okay, that's how I explain what happened here. And instead just being like, what if, like, I don't know how it happened and God is? And, you know, just kind of letting the simplicity be what matters. And that kind of gave me a lot of peace. So that's where I'm like, you know, I picked a good time to start embracing this, I think.
That's really beautiful. And actually, so you suggested two books to talk about. Maybe we can kind of transition into that. And I looked up briefly on Wikipedia, of all places, about the these two books.
Only source of news.
and I just love the beauty of this. So the two books that he sent to me were and correct me if I pronounce it wrong, but the Tao of Pooh and the Te of Piglet. And I just love the way that it showcases is Pooh and kind of that simplicity and mindset that you were kind of just talking about. So I'll let you kind of jump into it a little bit and talk about those two books.
Yeah. So that's where, like, that was my first big set. Like, there's different stages in my life where I was like, I got more committed to this whole Taoist idea before I even embraced it. Right. And I remember early on, I was like, I liked it. And if God was ever proven not true, I would just be a Taoist. That's like something I would say, like, even in high school, because I remember like reading something like, oh, I like these ideas. I picked these two books up early on in my college career because, you know, my professor recommended when we were learning about Taoism. I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And at first I was like really aggravated. Like, he's using Pooh Bear as like the example for like what the Tao is, and Tao is supposed to be the thing that connects all of life. Like, that's basically like how I think of God is how a lot of them think of the Tao. And I'm like, and you're going to use Pooh as the example, really? You know, like, not like a great saint or anybody. Winnie the Pooh. And then I read it and it's like all this stuff where it's like, hey, yeah, Rabbit thinks too much, and that's why he's mad. And I'm like, oh. And Pooh's like, I like honey. I'm going to go for honey. And you know what? Pooh's happy. And it's like, oh. And so it's this like profound simplicity and just like learning who you are and being okay with that. Mm-hmm. And that's like a lot of Taoism is like being okay with who you are, what the world is around you, all that kind of stuff. So like the Tao Pooh, some of the time talk about that. And that's when I first found one of my favorite photos. It was that same author, something Benjamin Hoff, I believe, mm-hmm. talks about, like, there's a picture that's pretty prevalent in a lot of Eastern countries, and it's so you have the Buddha, Siddhartha, you have Confucius, and you have Lao Tzu, mm-hmm. sitting around a vinegar, mm-hmm. and you know Buddha's making a bitterness face, and Confucius like looks like he's really contrary on like how to like what he should do with this to make it, you know, whatever. And then you see Lao Tzu with just this huge grin because it's like, wow, this vinegar tastes like vinegar. Uh-huh. You know, and it's like just appreciating things for what they are and learning to be okay with it. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean, you know, we don't try to change things or make the world a better place. Like, look at our country, right? Like, you know, like, I got the Captain America thing up here. Like, I love political commentary, mm-hmm. and I love engaging with those things, but also learning to just be okay with what is. And then also kind of like the thing that's interesting about the Tao is kind of, and this gets into the Te of Piglet, because like the Te is more about like what you actually are, like the essence of Mark, right? The essence of me, mm-hmm. might not be what I'm living into, right? Like being okay with the fact that I'll use myself as an example, right? Like, I'm overweight and I could be like, okay, I'm okay with that and I don't want to get myself better. That's not what it's talking about. Not about the Te is like your true essence of like what am I when I'm really living into myself. And that's getting into some of the taste and stuff later. Like, a lot of these have like websites and stuff will have like, you can put in information about yourself and it'll be like, here's what your balance looks like with the five tastes and here's what, you know, whatever, because it's like none of us are the same. But like, the essence of me isn't necessarily my mistakes, but it's my truest self. And that's where like my Christianity comes in. I'm like, well, I think my truest self is found in Christ, because God made me to be a certain way. And figuring out what that looks like means getting in touch with God, getting in touch with the Tao, ultimately so that I can find my Te, like the truest essence of me, and live into that and be happy with who I am, not trying to be someone else, but trying to be more true to who I was, you know, you want to say created or, you know, manifested to be, whatever. I have a weird relationship with how I think about time, so it's hard to use some of those terms. But you get what I'm saying, like figuring out the Te and living into that, knowing that my truest self is found in God, Christ, the Tao, and using those tools to find me and being okay with who I am. Yeah. Not focusing on like an afterlife or anything, just kind of focusing on like, if I find my day, I will be at peace with God, the universe, you, everybody. And that's cool. And, you know, if it ends with a like a nice heaven afterlife, that's nice, whatever, you know, but I don't need that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if this might be a good time to maybe define what Tao is and Te is, just because I hear you using a lot, and a lot of my listeners might not actually, they might be like me before I started looking this up and be like, I don't even know anything about this. And I don't know what he's talking about. What is the Tao, and kind of define that. I don't know if you want to define it. I have it up here too, but I could let you define it if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, you can read your definition and we could just kind of build off that.
Sure. So I'm on this philosophybuzz.com, and they're talking about Taoism. And it says Taoism is a philosophy and a religion tradition that originated in China, emphasizing living in harmony with the Tao. So the Tao is a term meaning the way. It's a path or a principle. And it's also seen as a natural order of the universe, an undefinable force guiding all things toward balance. I don't know if that kind of sums it up for you, if there's anything else that you think that kind of sums it up.
I really like that it has the undefinable word in the definition, because like that's a lot of it. And for me, I think God and the Tao are kind of the same thing. Like, I think that God is that thing that connects all of us. Like, I think that is who God is. And the thing that's interesting about the Tao is how many times, especially if you read like the Tao Te Ching, which is the, like, not really like the Bible, because I don't have something like that. That's like, you know, they don't believe in boxes, right? But like, it is the fundamental book of Taoism. And how many times when it explains it, it says, it's kind of like this and it's not like this. But if you find this, then you found the Tao. But it never kind of really defines it, right? Like, you don't have this, like, God is love kind of statement, you know, like a clear statement. The Tao is this, the Tao isn't this. You know, some of the examples is like, we'll talk about the five tastes later. If you focus too much on one, you've lost it. You've gotten confused. You've overwhelmed the balance. But if you find a good balance together, then you have found the Tao. And it's not like, oh, so what is the Tao? Great. Keep asking that question. That's kind of the point, right? Like, one of my favorites too is, don't make too much of yourself, but also don't make too little of yourself. If you make too much of yourself, you know, everyone's going to see through that and you're going to look like a fool. If you make too little of yourself, you're going to make other people feel foolish. And that also throws you out of harmony. So the real way, the way is what, if you read the English versions, it'll just say the way probably. Or technically an English translation also could be the force if you want to go Star Wars.
Yeah. But
the way is found when you find a balance where you're just kind of like honestly saying, hey, this is who I am. Not making too much of myself, not making too little. And it's funny because, like, growing up in a Christian tradition, I tend to make too little of myself. And I'm like, oh, humbleness and humility. And it's like, well, that isn't right either. Because if I'm like, oh, I mean nothing. And then someone's like, oh, you're working on 2 master's degree. And then, like, you have a fenced in yard. And it's like, well, you're nothing. What am I? You know, and it's like, oh, okay. I got to find the right thing. Like, don't make too much of myself, but don't make too little of myself. And that's, it's a challenge. But those kind of things, finding the balance, that is the Tao. And it's not easily definable, which is why I'm glad you had a definition.
Yeah. I can just feel some of my viewers or listeners like tensing up and be like, ah, how do I find this middle ground? If like, this is too much and this is too little, like, we're like, how do we define this? And I think that's part of the whole Taoism is that it isn't really definable. Like, it's something you have to find yourself.
Yeah. Well, and that too, is where like the don't respect the clever stuff also comes in. Cause you'll see where like, really smart people can justify different sides of a thing and you can debate all day. For example, did you ever watch The Good Place?
Yeah. Oh, I love
The Good Place. I love The Good Place. Mm-hmm. Cheaty, right? Like, he has really good reason and he's battling himself. He's filled up with too much knowledge and he's confused. So he can never really just make the decision. And the Tao would be, hey, maybe I don't know why this is the right thing, but I can kind of tell this is the right thing. So I'm just going to do it. Right. Like, and I think that's a lot of the things we get caught up in politics where someone's like, well, if you really think about it this way and turn upside down and squint really hard, this thing makes sense. And it's like, okay, but what if we just looked at it and said, you know, for example, Russia dictators bad. Sometimes, you know, like simplicity really kind of helps you like put stuff in perspective. And it's like sometimes, and I love knowledge. I'm, you know, going for 2 masters. Like, it's not like I'm anti-intellectual. It's just kind of a simplicity is the key to balance, I think, is really the thing. And a lot of us really just overthink it. And that's why I love this religion philosophy is that it's like, yeah, I am the person who tends to overthink it. That's why I'm like, I don't want to be called an expert. I use the term like aspiring Taoist Christian because I'm like, I'm not quite there. But I know that if I find that simplicity, that my life is usually better. And that's how I can find kind of some of that balance. And I think God is in the simple things. Maybe a still small voice. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, just talking about Taoism in general, and like you were talking about, like, you know, the nature of America and everything like that. And I, and especially with Christianity, like we were talking about, you know, how boxed in it is, you know, very legalistic sometimes. And it's just even hearing about other religions and really discussing and getting deep into like philosophical conversation, I think it kind of allows you to take that step back and see that the world's much bigger, and that it even allows you to process your own kind of circle and world as well, and allows you to process your own box as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot of beauty in that.
I'll throw another example. Mm-hmm. For people who've followed anything I do for a while, know that I like to talk about how time isn't real. You know, it's just one of the weird philosophy things. I'm like, I don't think time on its own is real. I think time space is real, but time doesn't exist on its own. Mm-hmm. Which is a concept we tend to think about, and we're like, oh yeah, well, if I could go back in time, well, yeah, time's not real. You can't really do that. But anyway, with that, it's really easy to think of some things. And that's part of, like, for me, that philosophy that sounds like highbrow and like, okay, that's just crazy people talk. But like, that for me is what informs some of it. It's why I love Captain America so much. When something comes up, it's like, a lot of times we're like, well, okay, if we do this thing that seems bad now, for example, we vote for someone who has committed sexual assault, and a lot of the church is convinced that this man somehow, even though he's terrible, in the end, it'll be better for us, right? And it's because they believe in time. So they believe in the future, something good will happen if we do something bad now, which is the philosophy of like utilitarianism, right? And for me, I'm like, time's not real. I know in this moment, it is bad to vote for someone who is evil. So in this moment, I will do the right thing. And that's kind of Cap's thing. You see Cap and Iron Man at odds a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And Iron Man's always like, okay, well, if we do this thing that seems bad now, we agree with the government, eventually something good will happen for us. So we need to do this to play the long game. And Cap's like, okay, but that's bad. We don't do bad things. Mm-hmm. And that's also like a Taoist principle. Like, it's like we think too much. Like, we think that we are so smart. We know what's going to happen in the future. None of us know for sure what's going to happen. For all we know, America just ends tomorrow. And what will be looked back on, if time exists, is did you do the right thing in the moment that you were given? Mm-hmm. Each moment. And like the Taoist principle is like, in this moment, the simple thing is, do I vote for someone who's committed sexual assault, who has, you know, sparked a riot against the Capitol? I just simplicity. Don't overthink it. Yeah, that seems bad. Right? Like, it's just on its face. Some stuff is just bad. Mm-hmm. And that simplicity, like, I'm like, that's the Tao. And that's where a lot of us, we've lost our balance because we've made it so much about, in the end, will we get what we want? Or how do we, you know, move things to empower us? And it's like, well, so you're trying to give yourself power. That's not balance. That's prioritizing one side over the other. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a balance of good and evil. It's a balance of like harmony. You know, when evil wins, look at Star Wars, if the dark side wins, mm-hmm. right? That's not balance. You know, it's not balance if there's just as much evil as good. It's when good allows everyone to have power for themselves. We're empowering others. That is what brings balance. Mm. Yeah.
I like that.
Let's see. I don't know how I got on that tangent. Did we ever define Tae?
We didn't define Tae.
That one's actually a little easier.
I don't have the definition of Tae, so I don't know. Maybe you could go ahead and take this one away.
Yeah, that one's a little easier. It's just the essence of what a thing is. So, like, your truest self is your Tae, basically. So, for us Christians, if we believe our truest self is found in Christ, which is, I think, an argument C.S. Lewis made, then, yeah, that's your Tae. Your Tae is found in Christ.
Okay.
I don't think it's in competition. That's another one of those where I'm like, it just seems like the stuff works really well together.
I love that. It's a nice, clean definition.
Yeah, a little bit easier.
A little bit easier.
I went on a long spiel for Tao, so, you know, made a quick little thing for Tae.
Well, I mean, I had all these other questions. I mean, like, how does Christianity and Taoism blend? I feel like we've actually covered quite a bit of that already, unless there's anything else you want to cover.
Yeah, I think the most simple way to say it is just, if you believe God is love, which I think pretty much all Christians do, even though a lot of times we disagree on love. And I think that's because we, you know, again, we prioritize knowledge too much. And we just, that's simple. Is hating someone love? No. Is denying someone's existence love? No. You know, like, simple stuff. But, you know, if we're going to say that God is love and that the Tao is finding the way that harmonizes us all, that sounds like love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I had this little question about, like, consciously or subconsciously how other cultures kind of blend in Taoist philosophy, like culturally into, you know, their whole culture. And I was thinking about things like lighting incense for funerals, or like the yin and yang. Is there anything that you've kind of seen, like within just maybe American culture, that you've seen that they kind of adopt or blend in with things?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a little easier to see in like anime and stuff mm-hmm. because, like, again, a lot of the Eastern thoughts blend with each other and promote one another. You know, it's not like Taoist or like, oh, you can't be Confucianist, you know, like mm-hmm. So a lot of times whenever, even in Japan, which, you know, Taoist is a Chinese religion and Japan and China aren't like best buds or anything, like, you'll still see ideas where you're like, it's very clearly a Taoist idea. And that's, you know, part of systematic ecology. It's one of the big things I think people don't notice is how our cultural thought, like as a unit, our culture has like a way of thinking, and the stuff that we think is right and wrong, how much of it is just influenced by pop culture media. Mm-hmm. So like, it's not really our pastors that are making the biggest difference of what people think are right and wrong. A lot of the times it's like what they're watching on TV, because seeing a story, the narrative is kind of informing, like, okay, I can see where this is right and where this is wrong. So the more anime gets big, mm-hmm. which it's been very much getting into like the mainstream pop culture, I think we see more people kind of leaning into these thoughts of like balance of, hey, yeah, this is right, this is wrong, kind of, you know, kind of that stuff. Like, you know, the Avatar is a big one, mm-hmm. you know, you know, the Avatar Last Airbender, and that's about to come up. Like, they already started the live action, they're going to make some more animated movies and stuff. So that's about to be kind of a revival. And I think you see a lot of those thought. And it's interesting how quickly you see that translate when you're like on Facebook or something, and you're like, all of a sudden someone's posting something about like, this guy's just like the Fire Lord. And I'm like, okay, I get that they're making a pop culture reference, but what's behind that pop culture reference is the Fire Lord's clearly throwing everything out of balance. Mm-hmm. And that anime is telling us that what we need is to find balance where everyone is empowered. Mm-hmm. And all of this kind of like Taoist ideas that are behind that cute little meme someone posted of how our nation's becoming the Fire Nation. You know, that's kind of where I see it the most.
That's good. I like that. So one thing I did notice is that there's a lot of confusion between Taoism with a T and Taoism with a D. I know they're pretty much, you know, the same thing, but I don't know if you've seen that and how you would kind of explain like the two, why there are two.
I think it is basically the same. My understanding is like it literally just at one point in time, more people who were studying it spelled it with a T when they transliterated it, because, mm-hmm. you know, they use different lettering. Uh-huh. And then someone else one day was like, actually, we should start using a D for that. And now people get confused because we started doing it one way and then changed it and started doing it another way. And they're like, which way is right? Uh-huh. And the funny thing is, it's really funny because it's like with Taoism, like Americans are the only ones who would really argue about this. You know, like no Taoist would care, because it's like, yeah, you're making yourself confused. And it's like, that's against the very principle of the thing that you're trying to pronounce. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we don't care how you pronounce it.
Let's see. So I'll go number three here. Does Taoism or Taoism work alongside other modes of philosophical thinking like Shintoism or religious practices like Buddhism or obviously Christianity? I feel like we kind of touched on this already, but I don't know if you had anything more to say on that.
Yeah. Christianity, I feel like we definitely kind of covered it. Shintoism is interesting. So the thing that's interesting when I was studying it is how much like even not directly communicating, just how much similarity you see between this kind of like Shintoism and Taoism thing. And it's just kind of like Eastern thought is just different. So it's like, it's just hard for me as a Westerner. I still, I'm like, I don't, what? Huh? They're like, yeah, I stop and I pay homages to these gods every week. I'm not religious. And I'm like, huh? what do you mean every week? Like, I know Christians who, you know, don't think about God every week, you know, like I'll be honest, like I don't like read my Bible every week or pray, go to church every week, you know. It's like, but you stop three times a week and you're like, I'm not religious. Like, huh? But it's interesting, like you see that kind of stuff, and like you're reading about Shintoism and how much Shintoism also has a lot of like this emphasis on the simple and finding simplicity. And it's like, that's not very far off from all the stuff, same stuff being said in Taoism. Mm. I find it interesting because a lot of stuff across all your like major religions, you see like love is emphasized, right? Caring for the other stuff that's like that's emphasized. But it's so interesting, like some of them is like Western religions seem to be the only ones that are like, and here's how you do it. Mm-hmm. You know, Confucianism does a little bit, I guess. Mm. But a lot of, you know, it's like, here's how you should have a relationship with spiritual realm. it is just laid out rules. That is mostly a Western thought. You still see some of that in a little bit in Shintoism. Like, there's tradition, but it's not like, you know, here is our text that tells you the Ten Commandments of what you should do. That doesn't exist. Even Confucian, you know, the Confucianist text is a lot more practical. It's probably the most practical Eastern religion that I know of. Mm-hmm. It'll say a lot of, like, here's how society should function. Here's how we should do things. And it's very much like defining, like, how you should relate to the world, kind of giving, like, instructions. But a lot of it still, it's not like, and if you don't, you're sinning. It's more of like a, this is probably a good idea. When you encounter Mark, you should probably greet him. You know, like, it's not something as specific as this, but, like, you should probably greet him with a handshake. But it's not like, if you don't do a handshake, you're in trouble. It's more just like, this is probably a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that. So just to bring in, like, another religion, a lot of people don't know what Shintoism means. So I found this. Shinto means the way of the gods. Shintoism is an ancient religion of Japan. Speaking specifically of Japan, it started at least as long as 1000 BCE, but is still practiced today by at least 5 million people. So very, very well practiced. The followers of Shintoism believe that spiritual powers exist in the world. So as opposed to, like, Taoism, where it's more of that kind of harmony and undefined, like, you know, balance with the world, this is more of that spiritual powers that kind of influence the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really, it gets a lot less easy to understand the more you look into, like, how it's actually stuff are being applied and practiced. Because so one temple I'm going to get to go to when I am in Japan, there's a Taoist temple, and it's like the thousand gods or something. And it has, like, these different deities, and it's like, this is Taoism. And it's like, but the Taoism doesn't have gods. And it's like, yeah, well, we kind of do too. It just, you know, it's not necessarily part of the religion, but it can be if you want. And it's like, oh, okay. But it's not in the Tao Te Ching. And so it's not like, you know, we're like, here's our Bible. It tells us about God. And they're like, there might be. It could be cool. If you want that, you can participate in it. And here's a place you could do that at. And it's a huge temple, right? And then, like, Shintos, like, they have, like, this idea is that there is a spirit in all things, which is where you get those crazy animes where it's like, here is the spirit of your coffee pot attacking you. Yeah. It's like everything has a spirit of it. And it's very interesting, like, if you look at how they describe the spirit of things, it's very close to how Taoism would describe, like, the Te, what is something's essence. So I think really the big difference actually comes more into, like, in Shintoism, everything has its own spirit and we honor the spirit in all things. Whereas in Taoism, everyone has its own Te, its own essence, but the Tao, the thing that they consider spiritual, it's the thing that connects all things, not the thing that is in of all things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Might be close to how, like, if we're going to, like, use Western labels and thoughts. So, like, if we talk about, like, there's some Christians who think of God as, like, panentheist, who are like, God is in all things. And there's some people who are like, pantheist, God is all things. So I think it's kind of like that, of, like, Shintoism might say that in all things is a deity. Whereas Taoism would say all things has its own essence and the Tao is part of that. All of it is in him, or it, not him. You know. Mm-hmm. Words are hard.
Words are hard. Yep. Yeah. They're always changing too. Every generation, yeah. Things change just a little bit.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But I don't know. Was that helpful? Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Like, no, I think you did. I think there's just a lot of, like, banter that we could even have, just because, like, there's just so much to kind of go into a lot of these subjects. You know, Shintoism, we were just talking about, or Taoism, like, the whole subject of this episode. There's just so much that you could probably dig into that we're probably not even going to get to on this. So all my listeners, seriously, like, go look it up. There's a lot to it. And there's a lot of, like, philosophical practices, because Taoism actually isn't, like, I mean, it's considered religion, but it's like the way we're describing it, it's not really like a religion. It's more of like spiritual practice. Yeah, and it's just kind of like kind of
the Western term that we've decided to label it with.
We like our labels here.
Yeah. They probably wouldn't have labeled it at all. So I think here's another, because, you know, we talk about theology beer camp. So I think this could be a good example too. So we have a lot of people who follow, like, Paul Tillich. Mm-hmm. Shout out to our good friend Taylor Thomas, Tillich Today. You guys should listen to that podcast. She's awesome. But, you know, Paul Tillich argues that God is the ground of being. So everything's essence is the thing that gives us being. The fact that we are things that exist are because God is the ground of being. So not necessarily an entity that we can have relationship with, right? As an open theist, you might could guess that I don't necessarily agree with that. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, you have things like, you know, other open theists like Tom Orr, Trip Fuller. They will, they're process theologians as well as open theists. So they'll be like, yeah, we can be in relationship with God, who is a separate thing, who is also in all things. And God can change. God's constantly, you know, changing his mind. He can be wrong. There's, he can't do all things. He might not be all powerful. These are kind of the, some of the things that they might say. If you get, well, Taylor's not sure if she would use the term Christianity or not. But like for me, I'm like, I don't really think of any of us as like separate religions, you know. But also I'm like, those are wildly different thoughts. Like, we are not agreeing on who this God character is, right? For me, I'm in an open relationship with God, who isn't like a separate entity, but rather is the thing that connects all things. Like, God is that relationship. Mm-hmm. So like, I might be taking open theism to the extreme of like, no, like the relationship itself, that is what God is. And that's very different than him being some separate thing that might be changing his mind and can't do all things, and very different from the ground of being where we all get our existence out of. And yet all of those gods still believe this thing of like, we should be connected, we should find harmony, all this kind of thing. So I think Eastern thought, we put these labels on it, you know. You know, for us, it's like, well, are you Christian or are you not Christian? Because like, that God doesn't sound like the God of the Bible, and you know, whatever. And we have those debates over here. And you can have similar debates of like, is Shintoism and Taoism two separate religions? Are they the same thing? Are they whatever? And you're like, well, because Shintoism, you know, there's each thing has a spirit, but in Taoism, everyone has an essence and are connected by a spirit. And it's like, well, you don't have to have these things in contention. One doesn't have to be right and one doesn't have to be wrong. We can live in this perpetual maybe, as Jack Caputo might say, right? Right, like, which another one I don't necessarily agree with, but like this God maybe, Shinto maybe, Taoist maybe, you know, I like adding that term of like, who knows? But I think that it's worth our time to get into like some theopoetics. You know, Josh Patterson turned me on to that. I love him too. Shout out Rethink Your Faith. I'm just gonna shout out everybody. but that idea of like, I think it's useful to live as though God is relationship, and that God is real, the Tao is real, harmony matters. It's useful to live as if those things are true. Mm-hmm. And also important for me to be humble enough to say, I don't know if they're true. And I think that's something that I think they just do better with some of these Eastern religions than maybe we do in our Western thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's things that we do better as well, but it's easier to look at the other side and go, they're doing this better.
You know. I think with anything, there's beauty that you can pull out of it. There's also destructive things that you can identify as well. So I think, like you said, I mean, you don't know. Maybe there's some things that we do better, some things that they do better. It's all relative in a way, I guess.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So yeah, one thing I'm pretty big into like Korean culture. I've actually lived in Korea for a little bit. My family I married into is Korean, so I'm engulfed in the Korean culture. And so I looked up like, how does Taoism kind of relate into like South Korea specifically? Because, you know, Taoism is a very like Chinese or originated philosophy, and that's kind of spread across the whole world. Lots of different countries and cultures practice, people within those cultures practice this philosophy. So I was curious. So I looked it up, and a couple of these resources talked about how Taoism was integrated into Korean culture around, it's tough to say exactly when. I think it was the Joseon period but it was right around the time that like Confucianism kind of came in there, and it was almost like it was in contrast to how it was practiced in China. It was more integrated into like mountain monks and kind of practice into this like kind of mountain philosophy and religion sort of thing, whereas Confucianism kind of spread a little bit more widespread throughout the country. But yeah, Buddhism was more of the dominant religion. But I just thought it was kind of interesting. I was kind of interested in checking all that out. So I can't remember if it was the Joseon or the Goryeo or what period it was. But yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I find that this might be a talk for another day. I find it really interesting how quickly Buddhism has seemed to spread. It seems to be more prominent than a lot of the other Eastern thoughts. Not just here in America, but like even like, because you mentioned it, that was a thing in Korea. And I know when I study in Japan, it's like, it's Shinto and Buddhism. And it's like, Yeah, man, that religion really kind of people, something about our te, something about our essence seems to really resonate with some of those teachings, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So I'm wondering if we should jump into this five tastes. I know we're talking about it, and there's a lot of philosophy with that even. So I asked you if there's any specific kind of food, and since this is kind of a food podcast, I went ahead and made one of them here, and I can even share the thing
here.
It's
so picturesque.
Yeah, let me pull this up here. There we go. Mm. All right, so this is like a baby corn. Maybe you can explain what it is.
Oh, man. So it's like broad bean, corn, ginger, let's say baby corn, not just corn, ginger, carrots. Is that all that's in it? Oh,
yeah,
sugar, salt, and, you know, oil.
Oh, was there sugar?
Yeah, cooking it something. I think I read sugar and salt to taste.
Well, I'll come. Yeah, I didn't put any sugar, but I think it's delicious. So, and there was another recipe you sent to. I just didn't happen to take a photo of that one. But it was like bean sprouts and coriander, which is cilantro for our Western
listeners. Yeah, it took me a minute to figure out, too.
Yeah. Which I think is funny. We'll get to that in a second about coriander and the five tastes of what I found, at least. But yeah, the bean, and it was the ginger. So the big thing was the ginger. So whenever I wok fry things, I oftentimes put like diced garlic, and it kind of let it get aromatic and just kind of toast a little bit before I throw everything else in there. But I've never done ginger. I'm going to start using ginger way more often because it was delicious and it made the house smell so aromatic and so fantastic. And it just gives this nice, well-rounded flavor with everything. Like I'd never thought that, like I'd used ginger before, but I'd never thought to use it as like put it in there before and let it kind of toast a little bit in the oil. Everyone listening, like, do this from now on if you can. Like any Asian dishes you're making or anything that requires ginger, do this because it just adds such a nice flavor to everything.
Yeah, you know, I loved it. And it was it this one or the other one where you actually had to do like sticks of ginger in it?
This one said chips. It was in the recipe. Okay.
Was it chips? So
that's why I bought the chips, the already cut chips from the store.
Future editor Mark again with edit number 2. I misheard Joshua when he was talking about chips of ginger. I thought he had mentioned chips of carrots. So I went with conversation. I kept going. Although we were talking about two separate things, he was talking about chips of ginger. I was talking about carrot chips. So I just want to make this quick little note so that you are aware that we are talking about two separate things in the moment here. All right, back to the conversation.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think I cut it into sticks instead of chips. I think that's what happened. I think it was a me mistake. I was a little worried about bite into because, like, you know, they're using it like garlic in some of the other recipes I followed. And I was like, I wouldn't want to bite into a garlic. So I was kind of worried about just biting into a chip of ginger. But like you said, the smell was great. The flavor, I love the ginger flavor. Overall, I wasn't a huge fan of either dish, I don't think. I think I like the other one better, though. I did like the one with where there's like bean sprouts and stuff. I think I added too much beans to this one. And it just, you know, it's practice. I've not cooked a lot of Asian cuisine before. This is actually my first, like, I haven't done like Taoist foods before, and I was thinking about it because of your podcast made me think about it, is why I wanted to get into it. And I was like, Mark, let's just do this together. It would be fun. And then I was like, it was a good experience. I definitely like the scent thing. And my big takeaway is like, I want more ginger. If I made that dish again, I would do not prominently broad beans, maybe do a little bit better of a balance. Cause it was like, I just had so much beans. And then I think I put too much cilantro in the other dish too, but I like cilantro. So it wasn't a big deal.
I couldn't find broad beans, but I used a shelled edamame. And it worked just fine, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's basically the same thing. It was good. It just was like, I don't know, over time, I couldn't eat a mass quantity of it. I would have to eat it in smaller quantities. But that might just be like me as an American. I'm like, I like eating huge quantities of food, and I couldn't eat a huge quantity of that. You know, like,
so to my listeners who are interested in this recipe, I can try to post it. I've been really bad about posting it, so maybe I can just give a quick run at me because this recipe is simple. Both of them are. So all you do is you dice up the ginger real small. You get your broad beans, your baby corn, and your carrots, however you want to cut the carrots. And you get the oil hot in a wok. throw the ginger in there and let it cook for just maybe like 30 seconds and then throw everything else in there. Stir fry it for like a minute, add a little bit of water after it's been cooking for a little bit. Hopefully the oil, you don't have too much oil in there so it doesn't splatter. And then let that kind of like marinate just a little bit. You don't need too much water, just a little bit to kind of, what's the term? Just let it kind of cook down. Yeah, steam a little bit. And then it's ready. That's it. And it's the same thing with the bean sprouts and coriander one. So you do the ginger and then you throw in the bean sprouts and coriander, except you have to blanch the bean sprouts for about 30 seconds, I think is what it said. Yeah. And then you pat it dry and then you throw it back in the wok. So you do that first before the wok. And so they're super simple. And I think it went pretty quick for me. It was just kind of straightforward for me because I'm used to cooking like Korean food and everything like that. So
No, I think I did like soba noodles. So those are really good. For me, I think it was just kind of like, I could see where this would have been a lot better if I was a better cook, you know, better. Cause like, I just haven't made this kind of dish very often. So like, I want to practice. I want to do more. That's my other big takeaway, other than I just want to use ginger more. I kind of want to do like almost like a ratatouille style where like, you know, like you have like all the sliced vegetables go down. I kind of want to do one of those, but like add ginger as one of the slices. Cause like, I was like, you know, I like it. I was just like, I'm like, man, really, I just want really more nice ginger in my life.
Thin pickled ginger or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good too. Man. Yeah.
So maybe we can kind of jump into this five tastes. So what I found this Substack. It was Defu Yang Sophie Substack. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you had a chance to see it. I could even share it with you if you want.
Yeah, no, I was trying to see if I still had it pulled
you
up. I read through it.
Oh, did you? Okay. Yeah. So basically the whole principle is that there is colors, the sounds, and the tastes. So the colors, if you fixate on one color, such as red, you ignore the others, you lead to an imbalance in your energy. Sounds, immersing yourself exclusively in one type of music or sound can have a similar effect. Taste, overindulging in a specific taste, like spiciness, dulls your palate over time. So to have this balance, the most balanced color, the most balanced sound, the most balanced taste is to have none. Like is to get too close to neutral and none as you can. So like no color, where you can experience all the colors through it, or like no sound, you can experience all the sounds, no taste, or you have tastelessness, so you can experience the neutrality and have all the flavors kind of come together. So in a nutshell, that's kind of like what we're kind of looking at with all this. I don't know if you have any more thoughts to expand on.
I mean, that's another fun, interesting, and challenging Taoist principle is like practicing presence through absence of like emptying yourself so that you are more present in each moment and appreciating what is there. Translating over to like the food stuff, it was interesting, especially like reading into it, because whenever I just read the Tao Te Ching a lot, and when I get to the part and it's like, I forget how it's worded in English, but it's kind of like, you know, if you overindulge the five tastes, you become confused. And the way that my brain read it was like, oh, okay, so I want to do just one taste and not all five so that I don't get confused. And it's like, nope, I actually didn't mean that at all. It's like, okay, that's interesting. I don't know. This is one of those where I'm like, I don't know if I agree with it. I like the concept. I like where he's going with it. I understand, like, you know, finding emptiness allows you to appreciate what's there. And I do like the concept. But I think I like it a little bit better, more like how like Shinto, I forget what it is, but that's like the Japanese cuisine of like that 9-course meal where like it's telling a story. So each one's like a different flavor and it's going through, or even like a Passover, you know, how like the Passover meal tells that story where like this is bitterness and this is this and it's going through. I think I like that a little bit better just because I like the idea of having all five things present, maybe not all at once, maybe also not trying to get to know flavor, but rather each of the flavors in small quantities to tell a narrative using culinary arts. I think that's just, for me, something that I appreciate a little bit more, but maybe that makes me a bad Taoist. I don't know.
I like that. So this whole Substack post, it kind of goes into the like, practical wisdom of it. And I like that you didn't like exactly feel like you agreed with everything, with, you know, the the balance of it and trying to just, you know, focus on like no flavors and all that kind of stuff. But the practical wisdom that this talks about is the visual clarity. So stepping back from overstimulation, we can notice how different colors affect our emotions and energy. Auditory sensitivity, with quiet reflection, we discern which sounds uplift us and which disrupt our inner harmony. And refined taste, by avoiding extremes, we rediscover the authentic flavors of food without craving overly sweet, spicy, or artificial taste. I think there's a lot of beauty within that. And especially even when we were talking about kind of politics within America here, I feel like even that is taking that step back and allowing yourself to kind of rediscover the harmony within all thoughts of everything too. Yeah. So I feel like that's like another fourth point we could even talk about is thoughts and emotion and all that. So,
I mean, I like the point of the extremes, even if I don't like the idea of tasteless food, you know, or colorless food. I still like the idea of the extremes. You know, you tie it to politics. You know, I'm thinking like immigration. Like, it is a terrible idea to let literally anyone who wants in. We don't have the infrastructure for that. It's also kind of corrupt to be like, we're just going to deny people access altogether. It's like, yeah, there's got to be something that's not extreme, right? Like, and like with food, especially, man, like you do get some of those dishes where it's like, if I just put enough spice on here, they won't notice the flavor. And I'm like, actually, when I eat meat, I want to taste the meat. I have a little bit of spice or a little bit of, you know, sweet, whatever with it. But like, I want to taste the food for what it is, you know, getting to like the day, I guess, you know, that the essence of my food, I still want it to be there. It reminds me of like a Parks and Rec. They have the big cook-off and they have like the vegan burger. It has all the special stuff to it. And Ron's like, beef, grill, bun, there. And it's like, oh, yeah, this tastes good. Sometimes food tastes good if you just let it be.
Yeah. And he even,
just a little.
I forget what character it was. I forget his name. It's Rob Lowe's character. And he's making – so those who don't know Parks and Rec, that particular episode, Rob Lowe's character, whatever his character name is, he's making a vegan patty, burger patty. And Ron Swans is just like, burger, just put beef on the grill. And he's like, no, I've got all these spices. It's going to be fantastic. And he makes this whole thing. And it looks artisan. It looks like straight out of like one of those fine restaurants. So Ron takes a bite of that. Or no, he's like, just try my beef, and takes a bite. He's like, oh, that's way better.
Yeah. And it's, I don't even think he used salt or anything.
Just beef bun.
And like, yeah, that's true. Like, and that's for me. And like, it's a huge thing. And it's, you know, I love cooking, and that's a mistake I made a lot early on, is like over salting stuff or like putting too much, you know, the Cajun season, because like I love this seasoning. And it's like, you know, sometimes a little bit goes a long way. Yeah,
we're over at our home. We're used to cooking with minimal seasonings if possible. So this little dish, I mean, I like I said, I found it fantastic and delicious. Yeah. I know you had a different take on it, but this is like right up our alley.
I just need practice. That's all.
Like tasting all those flavors. Like you can like with the minimal. I put a little bit of salt on it, but the ginger. Like you can taste the ginger. Like you can taste the little baby carrots, the baby corn, the carrots as well, and the beans, like all individually, all together. And you can even taste the oil that you use too. And it, like the fact that you don't use too much seasoning, and that you can taste the oil like that you use. It's because we use avocado oil for this one particularly, and like I can taste that avocado oil flavor in there too. Yeah, and
that's great.
It's just like I love that kind of fantastic. It's because you go to like McDonald's, everything's so salted up, and you can't taste any specific flavor than just salt, sodium, and a little bit of meat with it. So I think there's just something beautiful about that.
One more pop culture reference.
Yeah.
I got to represent my my SG folk. Supernatural. One of my favorite things is Castiel, one of the angels, becomes human. Mm-hmm. And he describes the glory of eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Uh-huh. It's just so funny. He's like, it's like, as an angel, what happens is like, I don't just taste it. I taste like every single thing that went into making the bread and every single thing that made it the peanut butter. And like, it's all like all the separate stuff. And then like as a human, I'm like, it just tastes like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yeah. BB&Js are great. Uh-huh. It's just so funny to kind of hear that take of like, he's like, he gets overwhelmed as an angel because they can taste all of the things. And then he's like, as a human, I'm able to just kind of like simply, it tastes like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And that simplicity is, that's where it's at, man.
So I'm wondering if we should might wrap this up here. I do want to kind of talk about some of the things that you're a part of. So you mentioned that you're part of the Anazao Podcast Network. So you're a part of a bunch of stuff. And so I don't know if you want to kind of take it off from there and talk about some of the stuff.
Oh, yeah. Just a collection of different podcasts, basically me and my friends' shows. A lot of them are pop culture reference. Some of them are less so. You know, I'm part of the Whole Church Podcast. That's we do ecumenical work, looking at stuff like that. Recently, we had an episode about the food industry on there, so your listeners might be interested in that one. That was kind of fun. Systematic Ecology is kind of just anything pop culture referenced, you know. And instead of trying to like plug Jesus into it, we're like, we're going to talk about what is this IP saying, and what are our takes on its message for what it is, as people who are Christians, rather than, you know, just trying to plug a square into a round hole kind of thing. And then, you know, I mentioned to you earlier, my friend Brandon Knight's on there as well. He has a couple shows, My Seminary Life, where he talks about stuff that he learned in seminary and stuff that he's continuing to learn in independent studies now. And he has Kung Fu Pizza Party, so all about kung fu movies and media, and a quick 30-minute episodes, and they're fantastic.
Add some pizza in there, you got a good time.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's all you need. It just makes me think of like Ninja Turtles, just like the concept. I'm like, yeah, this is great.
And you also talked about your Substack that you occasionally update, about like Kingdom Hearts and everything, which I think
is fantastic. I have one written that I just keep forgetting to post. It's the Kingdom Key. So it's all about Taoism, Christianity, and the video game franchise Kingdom Hearts, which I love. It's probably my biggest passion, probably outside of philosophy, religion, or any of the highbrow stuff. So I'm like, I just really love playing and replaying all of the Kingdom Hearts games. All of them.
They're great games.
I love them.
Well, dude, Joshua, thank you so much for allowing the time to come on and talk about this. And I would love to have you on again at some point. This was a really fun conversation.
Yeah, this was great. And you've been on Systematic Ecology recently.
I have. We were talking about Dan to Dan.
Yeah, it was great, man. Yeah, it was great talking to you. Great having you on our show and getting to be over here and, you know, intermingle. Getting ready for next Theology Beer Camp, I guess.
For sure. It's going to be Minneapolis, which is my home turf. So,
sweet. Yeah, so we should see
if it'll make sense to go. I know we have a lot of stuff this year, so I will try to make it.
I hope so.
I'm still undecided at this point, so
we'll see.
We will see.
But I hope so. It'd be good to see you.
It would be good to see you, too.
Yeah, appreciate you, dude.
Appreciate you, too.
That's it for today's episode of Grub and Grace. I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Joshua Knoll about Taoism. I want to give a big thank you to Joshua for joining us on this episode. One thing I realized we mentioned but never actually discussed were the five severe flavors, or also known as the five spicy flavors or the five strict tastes. These are in reference to the sharp and pungent smelling vegetables and herbs which may fall under food restrictions to some who cultivate Tao. It is said that these foods provide unhealthy qi, and its consumption can affect the organs. They are garlic, which affects the heart and excites the qi of fire, onions, which affect the kidneys and deplete the qi of water, leeks, which affect the liver and overcomes the qi of the wood, spring onions, which affect the spleen and suppresses the earth's qi, and coriander, also known as cilantro, which affects the lungs and hinders the qi of the metal. The taste of these foods are very strong, and after consuming them, have additional effects to the body, mind, and spirit. The diet of a Taoist is light with no strict taste. This is purity, clarity, calmness of the mind, harmony of the qi, and being free from diseases. If you would like to find out more about food practices within Taoism, I would suggest looking into Baigu, or the rejection of grain, and the three corpses, or also known as the three worms, which is the idea that evil spirits or demonic supernatural beings strive to decay the body in order to feed on it. And a way to starve the three worms is by abstaining from grains. If you would like to make the dishes discussed in this episode, I will try to have those up on our website. you like the content that we produce, be sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, as well as a shining review. It would really help us out a lot. You can also visit our website, grubandgrace.com, and be sure to follow us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Until next time, stay curious, keep an open mind, and celebrate the traditions that bring us all together.